Z-Sphere's Core Stories. Z-Sphere's
Killer Technology.
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup, deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 78. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero. John's out this week, and so joining me as co-host is a good friend of the show, Mr. Cormac Hogan. Cormac, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Pete. How are you doing?
Doing well, man. Doing well. I'm so glad we got to get you on. I mean, you know, I know you've been asking to come on for a while, so I'm glad we finally got to fit you in.
Just so many emails I've sent you.
I know I'm a pain, and we love having you on though, man. You're fun. You're a good guest. You've got some good input. So this one specifically I wanted to have you on because we're talking about vSphere 6.7, but as it pertains to core storage. And so a lot of really good information came on this release. And that is why we have a special guest with us joining us, Jason Massey. Jason, welcome to the podcast.
How's it going, guys?
Doing well. So yeah, Jason, you wrote a blog post recently, and so for those of you listening, just Google it. It's What's New with vSphere 6.7 Core Storage. It's on our VirtualBlocks blog site. But Jason, you walked through a bunch of the new updates in vSphere 6.7 as it pertains to storage, and so I'd love to start there, man. Why don't you walk us through what's new in Core Storage?
Well, this was a huge release for Core Storage, actually one of the biggest we've ever done, and there has been a lot of enhancements and features, and a lot that will really add value to vSphere. One of the first ones was configurable automatic unmap.
Okay.
So previously in 6.5, right, we had automatic unmap, but it was set to either none or a priority of low, which only gave us about 25 megabits per second on reclaim. So now there's two methods, as they call it, and you have either priority, which is again still 25 megabit, or now you can do fixed, which lets you set it from anywhere from 100 megabits to 2 gigabytes in 100 megabyte increments.
Yeah, we had a lot of customers, but definitely partners asking for this. They felt that 25 megabits per second, even though it was automated, really they could do a lot more. So, you know, out at VMUGs and stuff, we'd had a few partners come up to us and say, you know, we can do a lot more than that. So any chance we can bump it up? So I think that's a great thing to see. What do you think, Jason? Should our customers kind of reach out to the partners and say, well, what can I actually bump this up to?
I think that's a really good idea because, you know, it's a lot of the flash vendors that were asking for it, right? Because they can handle substantially higher rates. But yeah, it would be best to work with the storage vendor, find out what is a good setting. That way you're not going to overload or impact any existing IO that's going on your system.
What happens if you overload though?
Well, it does limit it to whatever your fixed setting is. But, you know, if you did set it too high, it's going to be running in the background while your VMs are trying to run on the front end. So there could be an IO contention issue.
Ah, okay.
We've never had that with unmap before, right?
No. Unmap's been perfect, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Which would you like to talk about all paths down? No, sorry.
Right. Yeah, let's jump into the weeds, right? But one of the other things that's nice about unmap is as we continue to add features and enhance unmap, we've also added unmap for SE Sparse. So unmap for the snapshots that are on VMFS 6, we now can also reclaim space within those snapshots. And so that's another enhancement to add to the value of getting back space basically on your storage system.
So when you say snapshots, you're referring to the managed snapshots inside of VMware, so like VMFS snapshots?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, so the SE Sparse snapshot reclamation goes in and basically monitors and gathers up an aggregate of all of the different VMs that may have snapshots. And as it gets over 2 gigabytes, then it will trigger a time slice where it takes 512 megabytes per VMDK and slowly starts reclaiming that space from the snapshot itself. And it works across all VMs that have those snapshots until all of that space has been reclaimed.
So that's sort of like what we had for the Vue desktops going back a bit, but now we can use it for all snapshots. Is that right?
Correct.
Yeah, cool.
And I'm not in the field. So this quick, Cormac, do you see a lot of folks that maintain a lot of snapshots that are VMFS snapshots on there for longer than 24 hours? Or is that a common practice?
No, I don't think so, Pete. I mean, I think if customers want to keep snapshots, virtual machine snapshots typically aren't what they're going to do. They're going to use array-based snapshots, I think, for that, or snapshots of the whole volume.
But it never fails. It never fails. You see them out there. You hear these people talking about, oh, we had four of these. We don't know why there was no I/O at all. We don't know what happened. But, oh, look at that. We've had snapshots on there for 3 weeks.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, I had run a report on some snapshots on a data center, and I had found a couple of snapshots that were over 250 gigs because they had had them so long.
Oh.
Yeah, it's just, don't keep snapshots more than about 24 to 48 hours. Let's just make that a rule.
I even think we have a KB article that kind of gives those kind of guidelines as well, right?
Oh, yeah, so, yeah. Yeah, I think the last, John and I did a session at VMworld a year ago with, it was called Snapshot Suck, and it literally had that, I think we opened with that KB article as our first image. Before we even start this conversation, you shouldn't have them out there for more than 24 hours. Moving on.
There you go.
But yeah, this is great. So now that we can have those, you know, now that those we have unmapped for those, so there's a lot of space reclamation for the folks that are not adhering to policy. So keeping people out of trouble.
Exactly.
So I like it.
The next big one that was released is supporting 4K native drives. So the advanced format drives. So now we can attach, these are direct attached. So either in the server or direct attached systems, we can support 4K native drives. And it's done with a software emulation. And it allows you to be able to run legacy OSs on a 4K native drive.
Yeah, we had the 512 emulation in 6.5, I think, right? So these would have been the 4K sector size, but they emulated the 512 sector. So that meant we didn't really have to do anything from a guest OS perspective. They just worked as you would expect. But because we want to support 4K native, most of the guest OS running in VMs wouldn't understand that new sector size. So we've essentially moved that emulation out of the drive and into the I/O stack, I guess.
Correct. Yeah, that's exactly where it is.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's actually in the PSA stack. And so the way that works is if there's ever either one of two ways, either if it's an unaligned with physical sectors, so if it is 4K I/O, but it's not aligned with the physical file system, it will trigger what's called a read, modify, write. Or if it's a 512 read or write, then it also triggers the read, modify, write instance. And so that read, modify, write allows you then to basically, that's the emulation. It takes the 512, modifies the 512 block in the 4K sector, and then writes it back as a 4K block.
Got it. And the VMFS6 has already been, that already supports 4K, right? If I remember correctly, or VMFS6 file system, that can
it
just...
Does.
Yeah.
So currently, if this was released, it doesn't support BMDKs for 4K. That's future thing, but it does support the 512E or regular 512 BMDK.
Regardless of operating system.
Correct. Yeah, and it will work for vSAN capacity drives. If you're so interested in running some of the new 4K HDDs, you can run those in vSAN as a capacity drive only.
You wouldn't put that in your cache then.
Correct. Yeah, a little too slow because they are HDDs only. They're not SSDs or
exactly.
NVMe.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was kind of a big one that's been requested by a lot of the vendors because the 4K drives, they can get much larger sizes than the current 512 sector size drives. So just again, continuing with the industry as it develops.
I like it. You know, it's funny. I always think now when you talk about vSAN, when you mention that, it seems like everything that we talk about with vSAN is all flash. But, you know, when we went to Empower a couple of weeks ago, there were a lot of customers out there that were asking a lot of questions around these hybrid arrays still. So it's very common still out there that people are using a mixture of hybrid arrays. So that's, Cormac, I know you have a different perspective overseas. I know you're in Ireland, right? But I know you do a lot of traveling within all throughout Europe. So what are you seeing out there in terms of, is there a lot of folks using all flash vSAN? Or is there still a good mix?
It's still a good mix, Pete. Yeah. I think especially in the smaller deployments, we're certainly seeing still a lot of hybrid for sure. I guess when you go into the very much larger enterprise type customers, you tend to see a lot of all flash. One thing, I guess there is still a difference in price between, you know, US and perhaps the rest of the world when it comes to flash devices. They still tend to be quite expensive over in this part of the world. So I guess for that reason, we still see quite a bit of hybrid.
Ah, okay.
But, you know, having said that, we're also seeing quite a bit of NVMe now as well. So
yeah.
It's pretty interesting. Pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think the NVMe is definitely going to take over.
Sweet. All right. Well, look, I'm looking on the list here and I see this next one, Xcopy Enhancement. This is something I think the first time I read about a lot of these primitives was actually from Cormac. So Cormac, you probably have some input on this one as well. Tell us what's new with Xcopy Enhancement.
So Xcopy previously had some limitations and was somewhat limited to specific types of arrays, mostly EMC arrays. So with this Xcopy enhancement, what we've done is added the ability to support a standard SCSI 10, the T10 plugin. So most everybody supports that type of SCSI initiative. And so by doing that, all of these different array vendors can now take advantage of offloading with the VAAI functionality Xcopy to the array. And again, you know, reducing load and IO rates on the host themselves by letting the array do these Xcopy functionality.
Yeah, I guess if you're not familiar with VAAI, what that Xcopy does is it's basically instructing the array to do a clone operation. So rather than us copying the data within the ESXi host, we just go out to the array and say, hey, I need to move this set of blocks starting at this LBA and ending at that LBA. And I need to move to this other location. So can you do that on my behalf? And so what Jason was saying is that that was limited. The kind of throughput that we would allow on that was quite limited. But again, I think what we're doing is we're enabling these arrays. Again, you know, flash array vendors who feel that they can do it much faster than our limitation that we've put in place. They want to be able to kind of modify that limitation and do larger scale Xcopy clone in the array. That makes sense.
This was something that was already, it's fully functional in NFS already, right, Cormac? I mean, this was something that was already efficient in NFS. It just wasn't possible with iSCSI. Is that true?
That I'm not 100% sure of, Pete. The VAAI NAS stuff, there's a lot of stuff that takes care of anyway. So there's some subtle differences between the block and the NAS. But yeah, this is definitely something we're looking at just for block.
Yeah, one of the nice things too, in addition to adding that standard, the SCSI standard, is that we've also added in some parameters. And so similar to the unmap configurable, now you can configure, so you have an array value, basically, if you have separate different arrays, you can actually say which array uses which value. And with those values, you have segment and transfer size. So like Cormac was saying, now, if a vendor says, hey, I can handle much larger segments and a higher throughput with this Xcopy initiative, they can now set that for that array.
But yeah, probably, again, that's something we would need to get the customers to reach out to the storage array vendor and ask them, do they support this, first of all? And then what are their recommended settings? A bit like the unmap.
Sure.
Right.
That makes sense. All right. Yeah, cool. Yeah. And this is not, you said plugin, but this is just part of vSphere, right? So this is not something that needs to be installed that vSphere is supporting. This is just natively inside of vSphere, correct?
Correct. Yeah. So what it is that the different plugins are basically how the VAAI initiatives interact with the array itself.
Okay.
So there's the two different, there's array specific or vendor specific, and then there's the ones that use the SCSI T10 plugin, which is a generic standard across all industry.
Yep.
Yes, they're both a native into vSphere.
Okay. Yeah, I was just, when I heard plugin, I immediately started thinking back to my days of NetApp where the NFS VAAI was a plugin that had to be installed on the host, which is kind of clunky. I'd rather see it just native inside of vSphere.
Yeah, I think those things are tuned by those PSA rules. If you've come across those, Pete.
Yeah.
Which is a pluggable storage architecture, I guess, is what we call it. But it's basically you'd modify those rules on a per array basis and then it allows you to tune that value.
I had a different acronym for it, but I can't say it on the radio.
You can cut that bit out, right?
No, that stays on.
Yeah. So our next one, right? We've got Mr. Vivals with us, obviously.
Yeah, Cormac, thank you for joining us. Mr. Vivals, what's up, buddy?
Hey,
so,
I've got a question for you.
Should we do questions first? With the virtual volumes, we've done some pretty awesome enhancements this time. One that was kind of requested a lot by government was IPv6 end-to-end for the VASA provider. So now that's supported, and so there'll be some government agencies that'll be excited about that. That was one of their requirements. The other one that we added was TLS 1.2 is now the default for the VASA provider security.
Big one, yeah.
So again, enhanced security around the communications between the infrastructures. And then the biggest one is SCSI 3 persistent group reservations. Now, Cormac did a great little blog talking about this, but what this basically means is that now we can do shared VMDKs. And by being able to do shared VMDKs, we can now do Microsoft Windows Server failover clusters on vVols. So now you can get rid of your RDMs if you've got
vVols. Let's just repeat that.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now you can get rid of your RDMs.
Exactly.
So yeah, this is pretty big. This is substantial. And there's a few vendors out there. I think Cody over at Peer did a nice little video on migrating RDMs straight to vVols.
Yeah.
So that's a fantastic possibility. And then now being able to do shared VMDKs, you now can gain back all that functionality that you lose when you're running an RDM. So vMotion, you know, snapshots, that type of thing, you get that back by being able to use vVols and your WSFC cluster.
Yeah, this is really good stuff. I know this was a lot of the customer conversations I had prior to this release around vVol adoption. You know, one of the inhibitors, you know, everyone would always talk about, well, there was array-based replication. We needed that. And so vSphere 6.5, we got the array-based replication support. But then the other big one was support for Windows Server Failover Cluster as it pertains to shared disks, right? So now there's no SQL deployment that's not supported for virtual volumes. You know, you can still have your always on availability groups. You can also use the shared disk option. And I know this is only supported for cluster across box, CAB, as opposed to cluster in box, which makes sense. I mean, I don't think anyone's really using, I could be wrong, but I don't think anyone's using cluster in box in production. But nevertheless, this is supported for cluster across box, which is the CAB, which is the only supported mode. But this pretty much closes the door on any need for using RDMs. I mean, there's nothing. I mean, you've got Exchange, SQL, you've got any Windows Server failover cluster configuration is now supported with vVols. So I refuse to take any questions about RDMs from this point forward.
That's right. It's going to come up with a new acronym for RDMs now. And I've got a great icon for it. I'm going to see if I can get some stickers made for it.
Nice.
So you're right, Pete. You know, the last bastion of RDMs, if you will, has been that failover cluster.
Yeah.
And the fact that we can now support failover clustering on vVols, actually on vSAN as well.
Yeah.
I think we finally start seeing the demise of RDMs, which is a good thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It is definitely a good thing.
That's the part that surprises me, that people still use RDMs. Like, I know there was a need for it in certain areas, but some people even like attach LUNs to in-guest. I know people used to do that a lot in my last job, where they would just attach the LUN directly in guest as opposed to just mapping it all the way to the storage. But apparently a lot of people are still using RDMs, because we still get the questions, man. Customers keep submitting questions about how they set up their RDMs.
I think one of the things there, Pete, was there was this kind of, I suppose, concept of portability, that you could move your application between physical and virtual.
Right.
But the point is, with vVols, you can also do that.
Oh, yeah.
So you can take your vVol and present it to a physical host as well. So
that's right.
That reason, or that excuse, if you will, for still wanting to use RDMs, that goes out the window.
It's gone. Yeah.
Well, you know, there was back in, what was it, vSphere 4 or something like that, people thought that if you did RDMs, it would be faster.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, there could be those holdouts where, oh, if I do an RDM, because they don't want to go through the storage stack and virtualization, that it's faster. So
I think I read that on Cormac's blog a couple of years back.
Right.
Don't believe anything you read on that blog.
Nice.
So the next one, which we can still talk about RDMs in the wrong way, but is the new path and LUN increase. So previously we had the 512, 2K, so 512 LUNs, 2,000 paths. Now that's been bumped up to 1,000 LUNs, 1024 and 4096 paths. So with that, on in addition, we've also increased the PV SCSI, so the VM SCSI adapter. Used to only support 15 per controller.
Yeah.
Now it supports 64 per controller.
That's so a big now jump.
It is a big jump, and it's pretty substantial because now you can have 256 devices attached to a VM, SCSI devices.
Hmm.
So if you needed to do, or if you're still using WSFC and you don't have VVols, SCSI controller zero ends up being for management. That leaves you 192 disks that you can now attach to a cluster, whereas before it was down around 45. So this is a pretty big jump, because if you are still using RDMs, you now can create much larger WSFC clusters or SQL clusters or whatever it is that you need to create, because now you can support significantly higher number of attached disks that can be shared.
I personally am still of the opinion
that LUNs suck,
but that's just me.
Yes, I agree. Yes, I am of the same opinion. And so, but the nice thing about this is that, again, continuing to increase these options and these features and these connectivity is that we're continuing to grow as the industry tends to grow and support larger and larger infrastructures.
So, I mean, that's quadrupled in the space of two releases, right?
Right.
So it's gone from 256 back in 256 devices back in 6.0, and now we're 6.7, and it's, you know, 1024.
And yeah, that's crazy. I was just reading a blog. I was doing some, it's funny, that's the problem with the internet, right? You start Googling stuff and you research and you find all these old limitations. And I read a white paper on that. It was like, well, as of today, the limitations are 256. And I was like, wow, that's changed, man.
Yeah. So now you support that at the VM level, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah. Crazy.
So the next one, end of life for VMFS3. So if you're still on VMFS3, it's probably a good idea to upgrade now.
Yeah.
I guess that that kind of ties in with the you know, the end of life of, it's 5.5 as well, isn't it?
It is. Yes.
Yeah. So need to start thinking about upgrading, folks.
Yes. Yeah. You're definitely. What was it? 2007 was VMFS3. So you're not at least VMFS5. You should probably be concerned here pretty quick, because you're probably on 5.5, because that's on 6.0, you could no longer create VMFS3 data stores. And that's so now in 6.7, it doesn't even support it. It will not even mount that data store. In fact, if you do an upgrade and you still have a VMFS3 data store, once the upgrade of the host, the first host in a cluster, has been completed, as soon as it mounts that data store, it's going to try and upgrade it to VMFS5. Now, one thing you want to keep in mind is that if it does do the upgrade to VMFS5, you are still going to maintain some of the block size of VMFS3. So it's really one of the best things you should do is just create a new VMFS6 data store, migrate everything, and then just get rid of that old data store. That way you're using the most efficient block sizes and the file system is much more optimized. And you're not bringing any legacy issues with you.
Yeah, I sometimes I'm of the mindset, I don't even know why we mention this. Nobody's going to be on VMFS3, but you still see people on XP or sometimes even Windows 2000. The people, I guess if it's working, sometimes people don't like to touch it and just let it, you know, you created it years ago. It's still up and running. And so, you know, what ain't broke, don't fix it, I guess.
There you go.
Not the case anymore.
The one thing I suppose we would want to highlight as well is that there is no upgrade path to VMFS6. So VMFS6 is, well, I think we learned our experiences by trying to do upgrades in the past from completely different file system types.
Yeah.
I remember especially going, I think it was from two to three, maybe it was. And we used kind of carve out an area at the end of the VMFS volume and try to, you know, move some blocks in there, format a little bit of the drive, then move some more blocks back in there, and it just didn't work out. No, and because there's such a change between the format between 5 and 6, I mean, the one thing is the 4K sector size support anyway is going to change that layout completely. I think we just bit the bullet, let's say, and went, let's just wipe it clean and start over. So it really is like a, you know, evacuate an old VMFS 5, format as VMFS 6, and then rinse and repeat across your environment.
It might just be me, but I have never been one to be a fan of upgrading. Like any, even my personal operating systems, I'm like, no, I don't care for upgrade. I'm going to do a fresh installation and get my data over there. So to me, that doesn't seem like a big deal, but I'm sure there are some folks out there that want to do the in-place upgrade.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, and I think it's just that it's so error-prone and there's so many corner cases of where something might go wrong. We've learned our lesson there. I think we just want to avoid that situation happening again and generating a whole bunch of SRs. Let's just go for a brand new format.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. You should just build a new one, do some storage vMotion, avoid all the headaches of trying to do the upgrade.
Well, yeah, you asked earlier, Cormac, if people are getting that message about 5.5 end of life. And I'll tell you right now, they're definitely getting the message because the volume of questions that I'm getting right now around virtual volumes is like doubling because people are, and they always say, well, we're moving off 5.5. And so we've always said that whenever we move off 5.5, we're going to try vVols because the first version is 6.0. And so all those questions are coming in now. So people are really starting to do their planning and their movement to 6.7. But that move is happening because now that everyone is finally being, now that we're burning the boats, people are now starting to look.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we are removing all those stumbling blocks, Pete. I mean, the 6.0 requirement was certainly one of them, but the fact that we now have support for, you know, pretty much every application, including, you know, Microsoft failover clusters, and the fact that we now support array replication as well.
Yes.
I think those were the other stumbling blocks. Now we're there's no reason not to at least evaluate it.
Oh, yeah. Agreed. All right. What's next, Jason? What do we got?
All right. So the next one, again, bringing in some new technology. We are now supporting PMEM, so persistent memory, so NVDIMMs. This is a pretty big deal because, you know, we've seen some incredible performance with SSDs and then NVMe. Well, now with PMEM, you've got performance of basically DRAM that's available as block storage, which is, if you look at that, it's almost 100 times faster than NVMe.
Jeez, and non-volatile.
Right, and it's non-volatile.
That's crazy.
So that is now supported in vSphere. And what's nice about this is that we support it in two different ways. You can support it as basically a data store that you could put any VM on. So, or you could do a piece of a VM, you know, because we could break it up and do a specific VMDK on that data store. So by doing this, we support legacy file systems and legacy applications that aren't aware of non-volatile memory. The next piece that you can use is that it can actually be passed to a VM if the operating system supports it. So now you can actually have the VM use the actual PMEM device, a virtual PMEM device within the VM itself. So if the application is aware of persistent memory, you can actually pass that through. And so again, that requires hardware 14 or above, which would be the 6.7 hardware support, and an operating system that does support persistent memory.
And Jason, do we need, is there a requirement to have specific server hardware? Is there only, I mean, can you just plug these things into any DRAM slot, or do you actually have to?
You do have to have supported hardware. Being such a newer technology, Dell and HP have been working really hard on this. And they're one of the few, I think, at this time that are supporting the NVDIMMs in the hardware itself. So yeah, you do have to have specific hardware at this time. You can't just go grab a PMEM stick and throw it in your memory slot and it shows up in your infrastructure. It won't work.
Cool.
But yeah, that's, I mean, when you're talking 100 times faster, you know, applications like this would be, you know, you could do some databases or some log functionality or some, you know, cache type of functionality for an application. And again, allowing for persistence on across reboots, you know, now you can get some incredibly fast reboots or booting up, and your applications come up back online very fast.
Yeah, it It's quite interesting to see how, I guess my impression for the longest time was that the storage industry was kind of, we were increasing the speed of fiber channel, but essentially things were staying very much the same.
Stagnant, yeah.
But now, yeah, in the last 4 or 5 years, the technologies that are coming out,
yeah,
it's amazing to see. No doubt this was all being worked on in the background, right? I mean, this isn't something that just happened overnight, but it just seems that, you know, we go from spinning disk to flash devices to NVMe devices to these DIMM devices in the space of just a couple of years. That's
a good point. I mean, if you think back to like 5-6 years ago, what we were using for traditional storage, spinning disk with just slower memory, slower drives, and yes, the storage was traditionally the bottleneck. I don't think that's the case anymore. There's certainly no excuse with the technology that's available now to have such a storage bottleneck.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking latencies in the nanoseconds when you're measuring PMEM. I mean, we're looking at microseconds with NVMe, but we're talking nanoseconds, so 1,000 times
yikes
faster with these PMEM devices. Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
Nice.
Sure is.
So next up was the Intel VMD, so the volume management devices. So speaking of NVMe, this was available. You could install this on 6.5. It was not inbox. But what this allows you to do is with the NVMe devices, because they're directly connected to the PCIe bus, you don't have all of the standard serviceability functionality that you would have on, say, SATA or SAS, which could be as simple as hot swapping a drive or literally, just turning an LED on so you know which device you need to pull if a device needs to be replaced. So this is a pretty simple functionality, but pretty advanced technology. So Intel has been enabling this. And again, this requires some of the newer CPU and hardware to be able to do this. But now we're just, again, ensuring that we're going to be able to have parity with the serviceability from SAS and SATA with NVMe drives.
Okay.
Especially with, vSAN, you go in there and you want to replace a drive. You want to be able to turn the LED on so you know which drive to pull out.
You don't just guess? You don't just grab
pull one.
Okay.
Just start pulling them until you find the one that is the one you want, right?
Yeah. vSAN is self-healing, right? It's no problem.
So Jason, this was an installable option in 6.5. Has that changed, or you still have to install this to manage it?
So now this is an inbox.
Ah.
So beautiful. No longer it's installed. It's inbox.
That's the way it should be.
And And again, as long as you have supported hardware, and CPU, then you can use this functionality.
I like it.
Nice.
Boy, there's a lot of little updates. This is a long blog post that you did. There's been a lot of updates in storage for 6.7. I mean, that's a .7. This is like a dot release. You don't expect to have like 30 different new feature enhancements.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. Going through and, I mean, the technical slide deck on this was over 90 slides. And, people were like, it's just, that's what it is. There's just, it's a lot of, kind of going back in that fit and finish, getting things really cleaned up, adding features. And then, of course, a lot of newer technology as well, and bringing that into the vSphere stack and the whole VMware realm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, Pete, that, we might give the impression that there's not a lot going on in core storage, but I think there always has been, but we haven't been very good in recent years at kind of highlighting it or, marketing all the things that we're doing around core storage. But it's great now that we have Jason on board, who can do all of that and take control of that core storage kind of from an outbound perspective and start just blogging, white papers, getting on podcasts when you nag him to get on podcasts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Share what's going on, right? That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I hope you're not trying to say that you're not going to come on future podcasts because now I have Jason. I'm reading between the lines there, Cormac.
Yeah, my hair is too short. We gotta have longer hair here.
We'll work on that. There we go.
Yeah, there's definitely a backlog of core storage functionality that needs to be, brought back up out there. So yeah, there'll definitely be a lot more coming out.
Sweet.
So next one is RDMA, so remote direct memory access. This is not necessarily a newer technology, but being able to use it in the vSphere realm, it is. And so what that allows you to do is transfer information or data directly from the memory of one host to the memory of another host, or the memory of a host to storage memory. And by doing that, you're bypassing CPU, OS, and a lot of the storage stack, and it is substantially faster. And what the RDMA support is really groundwork for one of the next ones, which allows you to do ICER, which is iSCSI extensions for RDMA. So now, typically we do iSCSI across, you know, standard Ethernet, or, you know, if we were doing SCSI itself, it would just be fiber channel or something like that. But now with RDMA support, you can get huge throughput and giant performance increases by doing iSCSI over RDMA, because now, again, we're bypassing those storage stacks and we're going from memory to memory, not through CPU, not through the storage stack, not even through the network stack. It literally is a special transport that allows you to go from memory to memory. So huge amount of throughput that you can gain with this, these two functionalities.
I thought this was already possible. How is this new?
It's new for vSphere.
Oh, okay.
So vSphere wasn't supporting RDMA and ICER. And so now that we've got that, it's, you can actually do this. And what's nice about the whole RDMA piece is that it can be used for some of the vSphere functionality, stuff like vMotion, fault tolerance, even vSAN, I believe, is in there. And so now you've got substantially higher, again, getting those higher throughputs by bypassing all of those stacks that we don't really need to access. We can enhance some of the core features. And then now we also support RDMA in the VM itself. So you can do RDMA transfer, data transfer between VMs, between VM and host, or between VM and storage if you needed to.
Jeez.
So if you're using ICER, the iSCSI over RDMA on a VM, you could get incredible throughput from a VM to storage.
So Jace, do we have to go, do we have to get our storage array vendors to kind of certify, to go through kind of a HCL approach so that you know, we can guarantee that they work with this technology?
So with some of the different protocols with RDMA, you have InfiniBand, IWARP, which is Internet Wide Area RDMA protocol, and then RoCE, which is RDMA over Converged Ethernet. Currently, we are supporting RoCE. So that's the type of connectivity that the host channel adapters are required. And again, this is, you know, going to require some special hardware. But once you have that hardware can be used, again, for both host and VM, or host or VM, for doing any of these RDMA or ICER connectivity. And yeah, like Cormac said, you do, the storage vendors do have to support this type of protocol and connectivity in order to be able to use the ICER connectivity to storage. So there are a few caveats on there, but this is going to allow, again, laying some groundwork, some, for some incredible throughput between different devices by being able to bypass the storage and CPU and just go straight from memory to memory.
I like it. I like it. All right, winding down here. We're almost to the bottom of the list here.
We are. The next one, or last here, I guess, looks like software FCOE. So fiber channel over Ethernet. Previously, one of the things that was required if you were using converged or the fiber channel over Ethernet is that you had to have some special adapters to be able to support the fiber channel over Ethernet. We have now created a software driver that allows you to do FCOE without any specific hardware. There are a few caveats. You do have to have some bridged functionality within your network. So if you don't have the data center bridge capability, you can't use this. One of the other things is that you do need to have at least 10 gigabit or higher in throughput. And the other thing is it does require mini jumbo frames. So what is it? That'd be 2,500 or something like that or above in order to use this functionality. But what this enables is that if somebody wanted to use FCOE, say, to, again, to direct connect or to connect to some external storage, this allows you to do this without having to have special hardware within the VM itself or within the host. You can just go in, attach an FCOE device to a VM, and then set up your paths to your storage and be able to use FCOE without, again, special hardware.
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, we've been able to do software iSCSI for the longest time now, so I guess it makes sense to be able to do the same thing for FCUE. Right. I on a personal basis, I just don't see a lot of FCUE out there. I don't know. Do you guys still come across it?
I see more of Fibre Channel over a token ring myself, but
Star Networks, right? Yeah. Yes, so yeah. I think this probably will go along with those same guys that are using RDMs.
Yeah.
So if they want to use RDMs and FCOE, hey, there you go.
Yeah, yeah. We're taking away, we're pulling this technology from your cold, dead hands and moving you into the future.
That's right.
But I guess there must be some demand. Maybe it's just that we're not seeing it. Maybe there must be some demand for it somewhere.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure there's somebody listening to this right now going, these idiots, I need this. I use this. But
right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
To that one guy, we salute you.
That's right. Enjoy those RDMs.
Awesome. Well, hey, that was a mouthful. There's a ton of updates in vSphere 6.7. As I mentioned, there is a blog post that covers all of this on Virtual Blocks. I'll be sure to leave a link to that in the show notes of this podcast. And yeah, Jason, thank you for coming on and joining us, giving us the update. Cormac, thanks for co-hosting. I got you on. We don't have it on the date on the calendar yet, but you've been doing some really cool things with HCI Bench and with some other related topics that I want to share with our audience. And so I'm hoping to have you on real soon. I know you've got a world tour ahead of you, though.
Yeah, I'll drag Paudi along as well. We've been doing a bit of stuff around the whole performance of vSAN and HCI. So I think it might be interesting. Might be an interesting podcast.
Yes, looking forward to that. So yeah, you and Paudi, come on and let's talk some HCI Bench. All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Jason and Cormac for joining us and geeking out on core storage. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now.
Lungs suck.
Oh, yeah.
Ah, you're the virtual speaking guy.
See?
Enough of this jibber jabber.